All right. We are in the book of James, chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Hopefully, if everybody has a sheet, if you want one. I know we've kind of been skipping around just a little bit as far as we've missed some of these, as far as, you know, missed a Sunday or whatever, but when we, as we look at the book of James, we understand if there was somebody besides our Lord, I'm getting the opinion I would have really liked to sit and visited with James. He seems to be a type of a writer that was very plain spoken, wasn't he? He didn't mince a lot of words. He would share with you what God had laid on his heart. And he didn't pull a lot of punches with it. So tonight, I would think that would have been interesting times. But thankfully, we can sit with him in the Word and listen to him. Tonight, we're looking at how we relate wisely to others, our relationships. Verses 13 through 18, he says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humanity that comes from wisdom, humility, excuse me, that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and of the devil. Where you have envy and selfish ambition, you will find disorder in every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial, and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness." Now that's the NIV says that at the end. Does anybody have a New Living Testament? Brian, which one is it you've got? I can't remember. What is that? What does verse 18 say? Okay. It's sown in peace. They raise peace by because that's what they sowed. That's what I was trying to get across. As I thought about this particular passage and this relating wisely to other people, and as, like I said, with James being very practical, part of the reason that I say that is because I think each and every day we encounter so many different types of people just in conversation, don't we? We visit with people who are such a delight to talk to. I mean, you know, they're just delightful. And then also we talk to people who are very difficult. We talk to people who inspire us. We also listen and we hear from people who irritate us. We listen to people who are fascinating. And we listen to people who are somewhat intimidating. So we have this wide range of people. We come to realize that a lot of the problems that people have in life, a lot of the difficulties and the problems that they experience are a result of the fact that they have personal or personality conflict. I think all of us would agree when there is a struggle within a relationship, whole life seems bad at that moment in time, doesn't it? Life is not good when your relationships are, when you're having problems with relationships. So it's important that we learn how to, the way I wrote it, and as I start to say it, that's not really what I was wanting to say, but anyway, I wrote down that, you know, it's important that we learn how to get along with other people, and that's not really the point I'm trying to make, really. We need to learn how to wisely deal with people. We don't necessarily always have to get along with them and agree with them. We don't need to always agree with them if they're wrong, but we need to learn how to relate to them wisely. The reason I had Brian read that for us, I couldn't remember what translation I wrote this down again, and it says, those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of goodness. That's not what yours said, okay? That's another translation. Anyway, what James is trying to say is that every day we are, in every relationship, we're planting seeds. Sometimes they're good seeds. Sometimes they're seeds of anger or jealousy. Sometimes they're seeds of peace or confidence. Sometimes they're seeds of insecurity. But the problem with it, or the reality of it is what James is telling us, is whatever we're planting, that's what we're going to reap. That's what that passage tells us. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of goodness. Well, we can say the opposite, couldn't we? If we're planting those other things, then that's what we're going to reap as well. He tells us that how we are peacemakers, or what the ingredient of peacemakers or a peaceful relationship is, that it takes wisdom. We need to learn how to be wise, or wisely relate to other people, is what I was saying earlier. He tells us really three things in this passage. He tells us, first of all, he defines what real wisdom is. Second thing he does is he also shows us that how it differs from human wisdom. And then he's going to give us details on how it operates. So in verse 13, you've got a couple blanks up there. The very first thing that he tells us, and the thing that we want to understand from this, is verse 13 tells us that wisdom is a lifestyle. It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle. Verse 13 says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by the deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. He tells us wisdom is a lifestyle. He's telling us it's not really just a matter of what we say, is it? Have you got that from the book so far, from the book of James? If you get anything else, you should get, he says, listen, it's not enough just to say it, because your tongue can come off and say all kinds of things. I want to see it. Show me. Show me this wisdom. Show me this love. Show me this devotion. Show it to me. And so he's just saying here with wisdom as well, it's not just what you say, it's what you do. It's how you react. It's how you relate wisely, or how you relate to other people. He says it's a lifestyle. Verses 14 through 16, he tells us if you lack wisdom, or if you lack in wisdom, it causes problems in your life. Well, we all know that, don't we? But that's why we're getting it kind of stated out here at the beginning, that wisdom is a lifestyle, and the lack of wisdom causes you problems. It's that simple. Listen to what he says, verses 14 through 17. If you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, don't boast about it and deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from the heaven, but is earthly. It's unspiritual, even of the devil. If you were to have an envy and selfish ambition, there you would find disorder in every evil practice. He tells us that the lack of wisdom is what causes most of the problems in our lives. It causes all kinds of disorder and confusion. So how do we know if we have wisdom? How do we know if we're wise in how we relate to people? Valid question, isn't it? Well, he answers it in verse 17 for us. And that's what we're going to spend most of our time. But listen to what he says. He gives us the characteristics of a wise person. He says, but wisdom that comes from heaven is, all right, now he's fixing the name of it, isn't he? Is, one, it's pure, it's peace-loving, it's considerate, it's submissive, it's full of mercy and good fruit, it's impartial and sincere. So he just lists them off for us. So let's go through them and let's look at them. And that's going to be number one on your list there, by the way. Number one, I'm wise. If I'm wise, I will not compromise. And what I put is my integrity. We won't compromise our integrity. He says the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure. So you can put my integrity in there, but off to the side or whatever, put pure. He says that wisdom is pure. Pure just simply means it's uncorrupted. It's authentic. It's genuine. It's you're a person of integrity. Proverbs 10:9 says the man of integrity walks securely. Now that's an Old Testament way or old language way of saying that a person that has integrity doesn't worry about what he said to this group or to this group and hopes that he doesn't worry about those two groups getting together, because what he has said has been honest to both groups, and so he doesn't have to keep it up. There, I've read a thing that says one quote, "No man has a good enough memory to be a lifetime habitual liar." I thought that was pretty good. We don't have a good enough memory for that. Eventually they'll say the wrong thing. They won't be able to keep that lie up. So James says, first of all, a characteristic of if you are wise about how you relate to people, then you won't compromise your integrity. You'll be pure. You'll have integrity. Second thing he says is that we won't antagonize your anger. I won't antagonize your anger. I'll be peace-loving. That's what he says. Wisdom is peace-loving. I won't antagonize you. Aren't those? I know y'all. I know we've all met those people who would just as soon always want to argue and just always looking for a fight. Aren't they such a blessing to be around? Don't you just get up in the morning and go, boy, I hope I run into that person today? No, I'm being sarcastic. We try to avoid them like the plague, don't we? Because it's something negative to our spirit, and that's what James is saying. He's saying, listen, if you want to relate wisely to other people, then don't provoke their anger. Don't antagonize. Don't intentionally get them riled up. This weekend, as y'all can imagine, it's been pretty wild this weekend. But we had both the girls for a considerable amount of this weekend. And I finally just took Ava off, kind of off to my office that I have at the house, the parlor. And I said, baby, granddaughter, I love you, but you have got to quit spurring on your little sister. Your aunt, mom, and I are tired. All right? Just about the time you get Libby set down, calm down, Ava comes through, and it's almost, I know she doesn't do it intentionally, it's sister things, I understand it, but it's like, oh, she's calmed down right now. Let me see if I can get her fired back up again. let me go and play with something that I know and that's not her mindset, but I'm just saying that's the result. I just told her, I said, listen, girl, I love you, but you're wearing Aunt Mom and I out, because y'all have been around Livy enough to know she has got plenty of energy. She is fired up most of the time anyhow. And so when you can finally get her calmed down and sitting watching a movie, something like that, then her sister would come through and go, well, I want to change, and starts changing the movie. I'm like, no, don't do that. We'll set you up another movie somewhere, all right? She's calmed down. But I was thinking about that. I thought, we do that as adults as well, don't we? Probably not intentionally. Those people that do it intentionally are the ones that we try to avoid. But we need to be conscious of, hey, am I stirring this person up? And I just wrote, I don't even remember, I don't think I put down, did I put down any blanks for the three things that cause arguments? All right, let me just tell you very quickly. What's the quickest way to start an argument is, first of all, is by comparing, isn't it? Now, All I have to do is say one, two, three phrases, and you're going to know what I'm talking about. You're just like, why can't you be like, or when I was your age? That's comparing, isn't it? That usually is a good way to start an argument. Also, we do it by condemning, by saying, well, it's your fault. You should be ashamed. We try to put guilt trips on people. We talked about this last week. I learned a long time ago. It doesn't do any good as a preacher, as a teacher, whatever, to put guilt trips out there. Because we feel guilty enough. We don't need to add it on to anybody. They already know that. And then the third one that I had to learn, after I left here as the youth minister, I went First Baptist Church Knott. How many of y'all know Larry Shaw, Senior? He was one of the deacons out there, and I mean, you know, I loved him, but he talks so slow. And he would get about halfway through a conversation or a sentence, and he would be talking about something, and it's like, yeah, you know, right down the, and I go, road? Road, what? Yes, what are you trying to get at? And he was so loving, and finally one day, we'd been there quite a long time, and he put his arm around me, and he said, Brother Mark, you know, in his long, it took him a while to say it, he said, you need to understand, he said, it kind of bothers people when you complete their sentence for them. I said, well, I'm going to work on it, and I did, and I learned a lesson, because I love Larry. But we do that sometimes, don't we? We get impatient with people. And a lot of times that will cause an argument. That will cause them their anger to get up on it. It eventually, obviously, it bothered Larry because he said something about it. It took him a long time, but he finally said something about it. But I learned a lesson that I'll never forget. And to this day, I'll still catch myself. Somebody will start trying to say something, and I'll want to complete their sentence. And then it'll just flash in my mind, Larry Shaw telling me something. So I just sit and listen. But those are some of the ways that we antagonize people. Proverbs 14:29, a wise man controls his temper. He knows that anger causes mistakes. And we could dive off into what happens when we get mad and what we say when we're mad. But I want to stick with what James is talking about here. The third thing he says that I won't minimize your feelings. If I'm going to be wise, I'm not going to minimize what your feelings are. You see what he says? Wisdom is considerate. So you can write out the side there if you want, be considerate, but wisdom is considerate. Now somebody tell me, what is it? Give me a good definition. I looked this up, and I had to hunt it up because I asked myself, what is a good definition for considerate? We use that word a lot, but what does considerate really mean? I looked it up, and I've got one here, but I also have a note here. Ask others. What would you say? What is a good definition for considerate? Okay. Caring about somebody else's feelings. Okay. Yeah, a lot of times it is, I think, DC. Thank you. Dictionary says, mindful of the feelings of others. So y'all, we're right on target, aren't we? That's what he's saying. Wisdom is considerate. I won't minimize what your feelings are. He said, wise people are considerate. They don't minimize other people's feelings. I don't have to accept what your feelings are necessarily. I don't have to accept them as being the authority. I don't have to accept them as being correct. But I need to at least be mindful of them. I think that's the thing that disturbs me the most about government. I don't care if it's local, county, state, or federal. I get so tired of hearing and watching grown adults talk to other people like they're children. Y'all know what I mean? You may not agree with what that man is saying, but that still doesn't, you know, that still doesn't give you the right to try to make him feel like he's just a blooming idiot. I've honestly found, this is going to get ahead, but I want to say it here. I have learned through the 20-some-odd years of being in ministry, I can learn something from everybody. Some people, there's not a whole lot to learn, but I can learn something from them. I've also learned there is always truth in criticism. I don't like criticism. I don't like getting it any more than anybody else does. I used to just, when I was younger, I would just discount it and say, well, I don't agree with that and forget it. But I have learned there is always a nugget of truth in criticism, isn't there? There's something that made that spark. Well, it's kind of the same thing here with somebody's feelings. You may not agree with them completely. You may not even agree with most of what they said. But most of the time, we can learn something from what they're saying. And like I say, it just bothers me. The other thing that bothers me is when I sit here, people playing this game, it's my day, beat your day. I had a worse day than you had. You know, I can't tell you how many couples I have talked to as a pastor, and they're talking about, well, you know, what's the problem? Well, you know, for example, I came in the other day, you know, and I tried to tell her that, you know, the office, it was terrible at the office at work, you know, and the air conditioner broke down, and on the way home I had a flat tire, and I said, okay. Well, I got home and I started telling her about that, and she's like, well, that's no big deal. You know, two of the kids came home sick. The third one that wasn't sick when they got home greased down the cap with oil, you know, and it's just, my day is worse than your day. Why can't we just accept that both people have bad days? You know what I mean? And James is just telling us that wisdom means we're not going to minimize that. I cringe when I hear somebody start talking about, you know, they've had this thing go wrong in their lives, and somebody will go, oh, well, yeah, I know. I had that thing, you know, I had something similar. You didn't. You didn't have anything similar. It's similar to you, but it's not similar to them, is it? And so we need to just understand that we don't need to minimize other people's feelings. And it kind of leads into this, the next one, and that is we won't criticize their suggestions. Their decisions or suggestions, whichever one you want to put there. We won't criticize their decisions or suggestions. He says, wisdom is submissive. We have such a problem with that word, submissive, don't we? We have a big problem with it. Y'all don't know my niece. If y'all remember, in October last year, Jennifer and the girls and Alty and I and Jeremy and Brianna, we all went to Virginia for a wedding. My niece is an actress. She's one of those A personality kind of people, you know, outgoing, bubbling, always joyful. She asked me to send her some suggestions for the ceremony. Well, I sent her the passage that I always use in Ephesians. And it looked like my fifth grade English paper when I got it back. It had red marks all over it and marks through and no, absolutely not. And so I just called her up and I said, now, Liz, listen. I said, first of all, I think you don't understand what the word submit means, submissive. Oh, I know what it means. You know, I mean, she was fired up. Well, by the time we got through talking, it was something that she wanted in her wedding. We misunderstand the word submissive, doesn't it? Submissive just simply means we're willing to take and be open to ideas or suggestions. We're willing to be open. That's all submission means. Think about, can we not apply that definition to what the Scripture talks to us about, that we are to be submissive to Christ? We need to be open to His ideas, don't we? For some reason, I know why, it's because our culture, but in the United States, we hate the word submit, don't we? That sounds too much like quit, too much like failure. But that's not what the word means. Wisdom is submissive. Wisdom just means that we are open-minded. We are willing to listen. We're willing to accept. That's what it means. We're reasonable. I gotta tell you, I find for Sunday nights especially, I always try to find y'all some good jokes and illustrations. I love this one. I'm just going to read it to you because I don't want to mess it up. So a new preacher was preaching on his first day, and when it was all over, a guy walks out and he says, "Pastor, that sermon stunk." Pastor was trying to be real open about it, real reasonable and real wise. And so he looked at him and he said, "Well, what didn't you like about it?" Well, he said, "In the first place, you read it. Second place, you read it poorly. And third thing, it wasn't worth reading in the first place." He was kind of standing there kind of shocked, and another guy walked up behind him, another church member, put his arm around him and said, "Listen, Pastor, don't worry. He said, "Don't listen to old Jim. All he does is repeat what he hears other people say." I don't know if it went that well with that point, but I just love that story. We need to be wise to open to, if we're going to be wise, we're going to be open to suggestions. And if it's true, we listen to it, right? But if it's not true, then forget it. It's that simple. But we can still be open to listening to it. Number five, if I'm wise, I won't emphasize your mistakes or someone else's mistakes, however you want to write that. James really hits a gem here, I think. I think he really gets down to the core of this. He said, wisdom is full of what? What word do y'all have there? Mercy and good fruit. We're not going to emphasize other people's mistakes. We're not going to jump on the bandwagon if we're wise. If we show wisdom. Because he said wisdom is full of mercy and good fruit. If I'm wise, I won't emphasize your mistakes. Proverbs 17:9 said, "Love forgets mistakes. Nagging about them parts even the best of friends." If we're wise, we're not going to hold things over people's heads, are we? We're going to be forgiving. Everybody stumbles. Everybody has issues in their life. And if we're wise, we're going to help them and encourage them instead of just always pointing those out to them. Do y'all remember what mercy is? It's when God doesn't give to us what we deserve. It's the same thing for us. Mercy, when we show mercy, it's when we don't give somebody what they deserve. They may deserve for somebody to tell them that was the stupidest thing you've ever seen in your life. But that's the last thing they need to hear. Huh? They probably already know it. But then he goes on and he says, he ties it together, doesn't he? Do y'all see that? Wisdom is full of mercy and good fruit. Remember, James is the show me guy, right? James is the one that says it's not enough just to speak it. Show me. So what that means is, and what I get from that at least, is not only do we not jump on the bandwagon and criticize them, but we encourage them. We say, "Hey, listen, I know you know that was a mistake, but let's go. What can I do? What can I do to help you? What can I do to encourage you?" Now, we don't just say, "I feel for you." We do something about it. We do something to encourage him. James said back in 2:12, "Mercy triumphs over judgment." So James is just trying to reemphasize the point that that if we're wise, we're not going to emphasize other people's mistakes. And then this last one, wisdom is impartial and sincere. What I got out of that is if I'm wise, I won't disguise my own weaknesses. I won't hide my own weaknesses. Now, we've had kind of a wild week, and so Brian and I met kind of late, but I had a note here to talk to him about this. And what I was reading with it, and you might look at this, Brian, if you get a chance right here on those two words. Something about the two words are very, very similar in the way what am I trying to say? They sound similar to the word that we get hypocrite from. But the point that I think he's making here is that it means when we don't disguise, when we don't put on a disguise, it means we're not going to be hypocritical. We're not going to be, and that hypocritical is one of those old English words, too, that we don't use very much, or we don't use it correctly, really. That word hypocritical, or hypocrisy, however you want to say that, comes from the idea of putting on a mask, doesn't it? And it comes from the theater. Nowadays, when we go to a theater, we expect to see one person per part. You'll have the lead, you'll have these, and you'll have all these supporting cast members. In the Greek theater, you might have one or two, maybe three at the most, but usually one or two actors, and they portrayed seven or eight different parts. Well, all they did is came around and they had these masks that had these sticks on the end of it, and they would hold that mask up in front of them so that you would know, well, they're being this character. And that's kind of the idea that we get from this word, and what it's telling us is that we won't put on a mask. We won't try to disguise who we are. We are going to be sincere. We're going to be frank with one another. Now, I shy away from this one, and I just said the word we're going to be frank with one another, and I was intentionally didn't write that word down because sometimes when we're frank with other people, we're not very considerate of them, are we? We need to be sincere, but we need to be kind to them. We need to be we need to be, wisdom, it says, is impartial and sincere. We don't need to try to hide our mask, put a mask on our face to expose them, do we? We need to be impartial and sincere. So the question comes, I need to wrap this up. The question comes, how do I get wisdom? Remember I told you James tells us three things. And now we're on this third one, and that is, how do we get that wisdom? How do we deal in this wisdom? How do we obtain this wisdom? Do we just decide to make a New Year's resolution that we're going to be more wise and it happens? No. That's the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge comes from education. Wisdom comes from God. Knowledge, you can get knowledge by just looking around. You get wisdom by looking up. Knowledge comes from reason. We can go through deductive reasoning, and we can get some, and understand some things. But wisdom comes from revelation. Knowledge is something that you learn, but wisdom is something that's given to you. It's a gift. Listen to what James said in James chapter 1, verse 5. Remember, all the way through his book, he's going to keep, it's almost like he tells you the bad news first, and then he tells you how it gets better, almost, doesn't he? He gets really blunt at the first, and then he ties it all together. And in James 1, 5, he says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. He makes it very plain. It's a gift. Wisdom is a gift. Colossians 2:3, the secret is Christ himself. In him lie hidden all the treasures of God's wisdom. Wisdom is wrapped up in the person of Jesus Christ. If you want more wisdom, you just get more of Jesus, don't you? And that's a dangerous way of saying that, but you let Jesus have more of your life is what I'm really trying to say. But you get more of Jesus. You invite him every day to you to for his thoughts to be your thoughts and for his words to be your words. And James would tell you that's pretty important, isn't it? Make sure what's coming out of our mouth is what Jesus is saying instead of us controlling. The wisest thing that we've ever done in our lives, y'all, and I say we because of those that are sitting in this room, the smartest and most wise thing we ever did in our lives was the day we invited Jesus in our life. Because that's where all wisdom comes from. That's where we get it. Now, when we put more wisdom in our lives, then it helps both ends of the equation. I'm talking about how we relate to one another. Remember, we've talked about the EGR people, the extra grace required people. Well, the more wisdom we have, the better the situation seems to be, doesn't it? And it's maybe not so much that they're getting better, but that we are. And that God is working through us, and God is making us be more, have more mercy and more grace towards them. But we need this wisdom. The way we get this wisdom is through Christ. Just that simple. And James makes it very plain, like I said, back here in chapter 1, verse 5. If you want wisdom, all you got to do is ask for it. But you got to ask the right person. You got to ask God. You got to ask Christ for it. So, how do we get more wisdom? Well, it's kind of like what I said. We all know it begins with inviting Christ in our life. Second thing it does is we just need to ask him. We need to ask him for wisdom. Tell y'all what, the older I get, the more often I find myself asking him for wisdom. How about, are y'all that way? When I was younger, I told my dad not too long ago, my dad is in his mid-70s, early 70s. They're about to move here and be right next to us. When I was 18, I truly didn't think he was a very smart person. I can remember having an argument with him on our farm out north of town, and I cut my conversation short from respect, but what I was thinking was, you are the stupidest human being I ever saw in my life. And I told him not too long ago, I said, I don't know what happened, Dad. I said, you know, I finished high school, I went to college, and you got smarter. Isn't that the case? Because the older we get, the more wisdom we have, and the more we have, the more we understand, we need more of it. But I find myself, y'all, every day saying, God, what's the remedy here? Younger days, I would have said, ooh, I think I got the answer to this. And when it didn't work right, then I'd gone back to God and said, why didn't that work? I'm getting more wisdom. So there's no shame. And what I'm trying to say is there's no shame in every day is asking God more and more for more wisdom, is it? Because that's what we need. We also gain more wisdom by being around brothers and sisters in Christ who have wisdom. That's why we teach our kids to have respect for older Christians, older adults, but older brothers and sisters Christians. That's why we show respect for those who are spiritual leaders in our life. It's because we understand that the Bible tells us, doesn't it, that iron sharpens iron, and one believer sharpens another believer. So we need to be around one another. And then the final one is the one that you already know, and that's God's Word. The more we spend time in God's Word, the more wisdom we get. For most of y'all, the ones that are here on Wednesday nights, That's one of the things about that study that we're doing on Wednesday night. Boy, we have to ask God for a lot of wisdom on that thing. Because it's, I was telling Wednesday night, if y'all remember, if y'all were there, it's getting pretty deep right now. There's a lot, there's deep, deep stuff that we're talking about. And when we are with one another and we look at that together with one another and we discuss that with one another, and it's all of God's Word, then it only helps us, doesn't it? We may not all come up to the same conclusion, and that's fine. But we're sharpening one another. We're helping one another. So we need to learn the lessons from James. One thing that I've figured out is it's a whole lot better and easier to learn the lesson the first time than to have to keep repeating that lesson, huh? So we need to learn the lesson. What is the lesson? He says, if I'm wise, I won't compromise my integrity. And this is just in case I ran past this and y'all missed one of these blanks, by the way. If I'm wise, I won't antagonize your anger. I won't minimize your feelings. I won't criticize your discussions or suggestions. I'm sorry, your decisions or suggestions. I won't emphasize your mistakes. And I won't disguise my own weakness. Questions, comments?